A political expert on Sudan compares the formal breakup of the country to a delicate medical operation.
The situation between the north and the south now is just like the Siamese twins. Any surgical mistakes could destroy both of them.
El-Moiz Abnoura is a political consultant on Sudan and a former senior economist in the Ministry of Energy. He says one of the toughest decisions is how to split oil revenues, which account for much of the budgets of the government of Sudan in Khartoum and the government of southern Sudan in Juba. Today, proceeds are divided equally from the sale of oil, which is produced in the south, but taken through a system of pipelines to the north for processing and export. Abnoura says the south should continue with the agreement and not create tension with talk of building an alternate pipeline from the south through neighboring Uganda or Kenya. Khartoum and Juba will also have to decide how to divide over $36 billion in debt owed to international creditors. John Temin, director of the Sudan program at the Washington-based U.S. Institute of Peace, says there are various ways to solve the problem.
One might be to try to identify what the debt was incurred for, what kind of projects, and whether those projects benefit the North or the South, and then to attribute that debt accordingly.
Or the two regions could divide the amount they owe based on their populations or on their share of the gross domestic product. They could also work with creditors to gain debt relief. North and South Sudan will also have to negotiate issues of citizenship and residency for the millions of Southerners who work in the North and Northerners, many whom are businessmen, living in the South. Borders will also have to be defined. Sudan's north-south boundary is one of the longest between neighboring African countries. One of the most contentious border disputes involves the oil-rich enclave of Abyei, which lies between the two regions. Both Khartoum and Juba claim Abyei, which is also the site of occasional violence between the region's Dinka cattle herders and Arab-speaking Misriya pastoralists from the north who bring their livestock to the region to graze during the dry season. A Sudan analyst with the International Crisis Group, Zach Verton, says such migratory tensions are usually handled by local and state officials.
In the politicized atmosphere around the referendum and this final stretch of the CPA, tensions are high because Abyei remains unresolved, because there's been violence and clashes in some border areas. These questions remain unresolved. Some of the migrations are on hold, and the discussions that are normally the answer are not being had. Now, the UN and others on both sides are trying to facilitate these discussions, and hopefully we should see a conference at the local level in the next week or two. If we don't find some solution to those issues all along the border, then you risk a localized conflict, which can always spiral out of control.
Verton says the solution is for the North and South to keep their mutual border as porous or soft as possible to allow the free movement of traders and herders essential to the economy. A similar policy already in place between Sudan and Egypt allows their citizens to enjoy what are called the four freedoms, freedoms of movement, residence, ownership, and work in either country. Another idea would be dual citizenship for citizens of the two regions. But so far, President Omar al-Bashir has spoken against the proposal, though he says he does favor establishing a set of economic and developmental agreements with Juba. Analyst John Temin says a new southern Sudan would have to join several international treaties, like the one governing the share of the Nile River waters. Egypt is the largest single consumer of the waters, but is concerned that southern Sudan could join upstream countries in East Africa in pushing for a greater share.
We have simultaneously the possibility of a new southern Sudanese state and also these efforts to renegotiate access to the Nile that are driven by some of the upstream countries, Ethiopia in particular. So my understanding is that the Sudanese are providing assurances that they will continue to work under their existing quota and that they would divide that quota for access to the Nile between North and South if there is secession.
With the creation of a new nation in July, the internal politics of the North and South are likely to change. President Bashir favors turning the North into an Islamic republic, a move that would reverse efforts under the five-year-old Comprehensive Peace Agreement to establish rights for religious and ethnic minorities. Some say the breakup of Sudan creates a new South in the North, made up of states with sizable non-Arabic minorities with cultural and political ties to the Old South. Analyst Zach Verton says it would leave Khartoum with the same problem that led to the breakup of the country.
When Southern Sudan opts for secession, they will opt out of the fundamental Sudan problem. But that fundamental problem will remain, and that is the concentration of wealth and power at the center in Khartoum at the expense of the peripheries. Certainly, we've seen other grievances in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile, in the transitional areas in the east and in Darfur. That center-periphery dynamic will remain, and those groups will continue to try and push forward with an agenda of democratic transformation.
For the South, analysts say the government will need to be inclusive and contain groups that, until now, have been held together by their common enemy, the Arab North. It will also have to settle disputes over land between returnees whose property is occupied or has been redistributed by the government or military. Sarah Pantuliano is a research fellow and head of the Humanitarian Policy Group with the Overseas Development Institute in London. She says in Juba, tensions between the local Bari group and others make it a test for the unity of southern Sudan.
Juba needs to prove there can be a capital for all southern Sudanese if the South secedes, and even within an autonomous southern Sudan region, it is important that Juba, you know, is able to accommodate southerners of different nationalities. The Bari, who are the indigenous people of Juba, see Juba as a Bari town and see Juba as Bari land, and they find it very difficult to accept, you know, that Dinka, Nuer, and other people take their land, occupy their land, go and live in Juba because they feel that that is an interference, you know, or an occupation rather of their own ancestral land. That's not an easy tension to dissipate because the Dinka do have a position of power, of supremacy, and particularly in the government.
Analyst John Timmon says southern unity depends on how the new government handles expectations in a region facing the return of tens of thousands of people from the north. Social and economic problems add to the challenge. The south includes fewer than 40 miles of paved road and a 20% illiteracy rate. Less than half of the population has access to clean water.
There are very high expectations amongst the southern population about improvements in life, tangible improvements that are going to happen after the referendum and after presumed independence. Those expectations are going to be almost impossible for the southern leadership and the GOS to meet. They've shown very limited capacity to be able to deliver services, healthcare, schools, and so forth. There are some good reasons for that limited capacity, but nonetheless, they're going to have to increase that capacity significantly to meet some of those expectations. And so how long do people wait for that? A year, 2 years, and how long are they going to sit patiently to wait for such things?
The U.S. government is working to encourage a peaceful transition to independence and joint cooperation between the North and South. In response to a peaceful solution to fighting in Sudan's western Darfur province and a smooth transition for the South, the administration is offering Khartoum what President Barack Obama calls a path to normal relations with the United States. That would include a lifting of economic sanctions and removing Sudan from the list of states that sponsor terrorism. If the South chooses independence, says President Obama, the international community and the United States will have an interest in ensuring that the two nations that emerge succeed as stable and economically viable neighbors. I'm William Eagle in Washington.